Welcome back. We are in Boston with Ray Kurzweil. We're on the famous Route 128. To come back to this issue about control, one of the reasons that you think what you think and do what you do is you're an inventor. You're in the business of controlling things and of inventing new ways to control who and what we are. Are we just completely self-deceived here?
Well, let me address this issue of control. I mean, first of all, it's a question of what's human. And I think this technology we're talking about is an expression and an extension of our human civilization. We're already down that path. I mean, for example, a substantial fraction of the financial investment decisions, which have a profound impact on our lives, are made by computerized systems, and not just program trading, but so-called quant systems, which develop quantitative pattern recognition-based models of the stock market and make their own decisions as well as their own strategies for investing. It's about $1 trillion of money, by some estimates, of the money of the funds that are controlled by these methods. And there's no human intervention other than very indirectly, in that at some point human engineers created these systems. And one of my companies is working in this field. And that's a very influential impact on our society by machine intelligence, narrow AI, narrow artificial intelligence. And there are many other examples in which machines are making decisions at a high level, decisions that used to be made by humans. Now, the machines at some level were, you know, created by humans. But I view it really as an expression, an extension of the powers of human civilization. And even when we get to the point where there are non-biological entities that have a personality and have a human presence and are operating at a fully human level or beyond, it's still an extension, an expression of the human civilization, which is already a hybrid human-machine civilization. It's not some invasion from outer space of non-biological entities that come in and take us over. It's something that's emerging from within our civilization. So control, this is human expression of humanity. Not every human has control of everything. I mean, each one of our individual humans are certainly influenced by our society and everything that's in it, and it's already a hybrid of machine and humans working together.
So were we more human when we didn't have technology?
Well, I think this is expanding our humanity. I think if you look out to several decades from now, human experience will be greater, human intelligence will be amplified, as it is already to some extent, through this intimate connection with technology.
That amplification is really important, isn't it?
That makes us more human. We'll be able to, more of us will be able to create music or art the way the masters did. I mean, we talk about the wonderful creations of the human civilization, like Beethoven or the art of Picasso, but how many of us can actually do that? I mean, wouldn't it be great if we routinely could be far more expressive and or think of the right comment at the right point, or have deeper, more meaningful relationships and communication with each other. I think this technology will enable us ultimately to be more of what we value in humanity, because that brings up another issue, which is the intertwined promise and peril of technology. I mean, there are dangers as well, but the positive side of it is that it allows us to be more human, and I think not less human. If you look, compare today to 200 years ago, we have been liberated to some extent from the tremendous poverty and labor-intensive lives that 99% of the human race lived 200 years ago. Human life was short, disease-prone, half the life expectancy it is today. People spent 6-7 hours preparing the evening meal. It was a very difficult existence. We've been, to some extent, liberated by technology and allowed to be more of what we value in human life, because we don't have a consensus on what those values are.
Well, in a way, what you've done is raise issues from a sort of outside perspective that makes those, you know, re-examining some of those things. You know, I think as you talk about Stuart Kaufman, who's a theoretical biologist and has spent a good deal of time trying to develop what he characterizes as a general biology, one that will apply anywhere, anywhen, that is to say non-carbon-based, that you could recognize life, you know, wherever you found it, whether it was in the sun or in space.
Anywhere in the universe.
And in some ways, the issues you're raising have to do with sort of a general intelligence, or as I think you're putting it, what is a general humanity, and it is a different subject than what we typically think of. And I think part of what is striking about it is you assert on the basis of a good deal of evidence that this is inevitable, barring some sort of catastrophic event, that the kinds of things you're talking about are more or less inevitable in the short term, and that these kinds of issues need to be addressed. We need to be thinking about them. We need to be talking about them, and we need to begin to develop a social or community consensus.
Yeah, I mean, I think related to what you're saying is my view of technology is it's more than just one of the activities we are engaged in. It's really a continuation of the evolutionary process that gave rise to the technology-creating species in the first place, which is us. And evolution has accelerated back to when the first cells were created. The first paradigm shift in evolution, which was the creation of cells and DNA, took billions of years. And things have accelerated ever since because each stage of evolution creates more powerful tools to create the next stage. So once DNA had evolved, that allowed evolutionary experiments to take place much more quickly because the DNA could keep a record of the experiments. Ultimately, evolution created a technology creating species that could then continue the evolutionary process through its own cultural and technological evolution at a much faster pace. And technology has evolved ever since. The first steps took tens of thousands of years, and today a paradigm shift like the World Wide Web only takes a few years. It's all part of the ever-accelerating pace of evolution, where each stage creates the foundation for the next stage to be more powerful and to take place more quickly. And so it's ultimately part of the great story of evolution that began billions of years ago, and it's will accelerate into this century.
Make this personal for me. You have invented a software package, software that recognizes the human voice and turns it into, as I read, the Age of Spiritual Machines. Some of that you talked into a computer so
speech
that it
recognition,
could.
Speech recognition.
Thank you. How is it different talking to the computer than it is talking to me?
Well, speech recognition is a particular technology. There are software packages out there. Millions of units of these have been sold, and it's really just it's just another input modality. So you're not having a conversation with your computer. You are creating a written document, and it's replacing typing.
And that's the way we've always thought about our tools, right? That they do what we tell them. And part of why it seems to me you're scary to some people is because you're saying that whole game changes.
Well, it's already changed. When we use self-organizing methods, which are biologically inspired, and Stu Kaufman's working with us on one project in that area, the results of those programs, even though we created them, are unpredictable. One method is called genetic algorithms, which is actually simulating evolution inside the computer. So, for example, you can create a million possible solutions to a problem, have them compete with each other, and the best ones survive, and then they procreate through a simulated sexual reproduction where the genetic code of two parents creates the offspring, and there's also a simulation of genetic errors. And it simulates the whole process of evolution, including sexual reproduction, and through thousands of generations of simulated evolution, which can take place in a matter of a few hours on the computer. It actually evolves solutions to a problem that are completely unanticipated by us engineers who set up this system, and are sometimes very clever solutions to the problems that we could never have come up with any other way. And these are routinely used to solve all kinds of problems. For example, designing jet engines, which have too many variables and are too complicated to actually just sit down and design directly. So we actually let the solution evolve through this simulated evolution. So it's not the case that technology is predictable or produces solutions that the person setting it up can anticipate. Already our systems are so complex that they're unpredictable just like people are, and they're embodying certain intelligent methods that are, for at least for narrow domains, are surprising.
This is Ray Kurzweil. We're going to be back with him here in Boston in just a moment. Please stay tuned.